cool things we can do, we can do, we can do. We love the cool things we can do on our computer.
When you need to talk technology, no one gets you more gigs than your hard drive. It's time for Adam the Computer Guy with Adam Le-
A very hearty good morning to you out there in Radio Land, whether you're in Marion or somewhere nearby like Delaware or Upper Sandusky, or maybe you're across the world. We are here broadcasting live with the Adam the Computer Guy radio show, starring yours truly, where we talk about technology topics and other fun stuff. Thank you so much for listening. Always appreciated. If you're a new listener to the Adam the Computer Guy radio show, I'd like to welcome you aboard. Always great to have more people tune into this show and take part in our technology-oriented discussion. We get together every Tuesday and Thursday shortly after 9 a.m. until 10 a.m. Of course, that's Eastern Daylight Time, and we talk about technology topics of interest. Most importantly, we are an audience participation show, and we do take your telephone calls. So if you have a question about the computer at your home or office, or maybe the smartphone in your pocket isn't being very smart, or anything related to technology in any fashion whatsoever, in fact, feel free to call me. I can answer questions. We can debate topics. We can discuss things that are going on in the technologically oriented and dominated world that we live in. And the phone number here at the radio station is 740-383-9944. It also comes to 740-383-WWGH. Sometimes we have special guests that call in or join us via the internet or even in person. We will probably have a special guest, regular commentator, shortly. But until that time arrives, we can talk about technology topics that might interest you as a listener, a user of technology, or what have you. If you are a new listener to the show, I wanted to tell you a little bit about myself, because that might help. My name is Adam Lepp, and I'm a local computer tech. I fix computers for homes, offices, businesses, etc. And I've been doing that I've been around computers since the mid-70s, but I've been doing this as a business owner for about 22 years, since 1995. Also in the website development business. I produce websites for businesses, organizations, and just plain folks like myself. I've been doing that, again, since the mid-90s, but I've been around computers in some fashion since using the Radio Shack, the very beloved Radio Shack TRS-80 computers in the mid-70s in junior high school. So been around computers for quite a while, and I enjoy talking about them, enjoy helping people with their computer problems, and it's something I think I've had kind of a knack for. And it does provide enjoyment. And being also a radio person of sorts, this show allows me to disseminate that knowledge and talk to folks and hopefully help with problems, debate aspects, good and bad, of technology, and see what might be on the horizon. Hopefully I can reach my brother in broadcasting, a frequent commentator on the show, someone I've done business with for about 5 or 6 years in multiple fashions. He's in Wales in the United Kingdom, where it's about 15 minutes after 2, so we'd say good morning to you folks, but good afternoon to him. His name is Nick.
Hello.
Sergey. And Nick, are you there? Hello,
we're
Nick.
Breaking up.
Hello, are you there, Nick? Hold on a second, please. Let me try to get Nick back on the phone. Sometimes even we technology people sometimes issues with.
Hello.
Nick, are you there? Hello. Can you hear me okay, Nick?
All I can hear is crackling, Adam.
Okay. Let's try a little harder here.
Just.
Can you hear me? Can you hear me okay now, Nick? Hello.
Breaking up.
Okay. Not sure what's going on. Hold on one second, please. Hold on a second. I'm going to try something. We'll try some connection adjustments to try to get Nick on the line here. And again, sometimes even we technology people have it. Technology functions. We had a lot of cool things to talk to Nick about today, so I do want him to be on the air and online so we can talk about these items.
Just crackle, crackle, crackle. I don't know if you can hear me.
Yeah, Nick, I can actually hear you loud and clear. Do you hear me okay?
Can you hear me?
Yeah, yes, I hear you loud.
1, 2, 3.
Hear you loud and clear.
No.
Okay. I'm going to go ahead and try to get Nick. Let's see if we can get Nick on the line here. I'm sure I can do it, for goodness sakes. Try to ring him once again. See, we actually have a telephone ringing noise.
Hello?
Nick, can you hear me okay? Nick, do you hear me okay?
Can't hear you.
Can you hear me?
Still can't hear you.
Okay. I'm going to go ahead and play a recorded segment because I want to go ahead and get Nick on the line because we had some really interesting things he wanted to talk about. And I do apologize for technical problems. They do occur from time. I'm not even sure why we're having them today, but that's how it is sometimes. I have some segments that I've recorded which have some good news about computers in the world around us. Go ahead and play one of those segments. And while we're playing one of those segments, I'm going to... Nick, are you there? Hello, Nick, are you there? Hello?
Can you hear me on here, Adam?
Yes, I hear you loud and clear, Nick. You sound great. Can you hear me?
1, 2, 3.
Can you hear me, Nick?
Testing.
Okay. Can you hear me, Nick?
It sounds like a speaker your end.
Okay.
Not having any luck at all.
Okay, well, that happens. I apologize. Let's see here. Let me try something. Headset on. Yeah, headset on. Everything looks... Can you hear me? Okay. I will go ahead, as I said, and play a recorded segment, some recent computer news that I've recorded in case these kind of things occur, because sometimes they do. And I will work on my technical issues, and I can assure you that I will get Nick on the line, and we'll get this working for you. Again, sometimes these things do occur. So bear with me, and I will be back with you shortly on the Adam the Computer Guy radio show. So are you looking for employment? Well, if you are, you more than likely, especially if you listen to this show or searching online through maybe Craigslist or job search, LinkedIn, which I've talked about often, is a good place to look for employers and employees. But, of course, almighty Google, they're in the job search arena also. And they've been doing some improvements, enhancements, adjustments, so to speak, of their job search system. They've recently announced a very highly anticipated launch of their job search aggregation technology. That sounds like fun. Following a recent announcement of their Google for Jobs program at their annual conference. Now, this system will let Google users search for jobs either on mobile devices or personal computers and use a set of filters to obtain very targeted results pulled from many across the web. During a recent keynote presentation, Google's CEO... Google has invested a lot of time, effort, and resources to enhance their machine learning for job search capabilities over the last year. According to their CEO, Sundar Pichai, he pointed to 2016's introduction of a Google Jobs application programs interface, a vertical machine learning model. Pretty fancy stuff, huh? Now, this Google Jobs application programming interface, or API, utilizes... two types of technologies that are proprietary. And they're pretty much there. Something that Google only can modify and offer. They deliver results that match both employers' and job seekers' needs. Now, this special technology includes 30 broad categories on top by 1,100 occupational families. And then, check this out, 250,000 specific occupations. I didn't know there were 250,000 specific occupations. It's a radio station. What do we have here? Webmaster, show host, producer. Of course, I do all three of those things. So I guess you could be that specific. Why not, right? It's good to know what you do for a living anyway. Anyway, 50,000 specific hard and soft skills with various relationships are included in this matrix of jobs. The Google search technology allows users to filter job searches by various criteria. For example, commuting distance or specific methods of transportation, like a bus, train, or a car. A train, sure. Well, we don't have trains in this area, but if you do, sure, why not? It can filter by seniority, benefits, employment type, or other information. Google tested this system with some of their partner firms, big companies like Johnson & Johnson, FedEx, CareerBuilder, and HealthSouth. 18% of applicants at Johnson & Johnson were more likely to apply for work once this technology was added to the mix. The technology was able to search for jobs across all levels of experience and wage jobs that are particularly hard to search for, like retail and hospitality jobs. The Google Jobs System on the Johnson & Johnson careers site, according to Sierd Gehring, Global VP of Talent Acquisition at Johnson & Johnson, anyway, said that the Google Jobs System on the Johnson & Johnson careers site enables candidates to find open positions across the company in a much more intuitive and relevant way, based on completely different search technology and a different taxonomy. This Google interface for jobs is able to serve up more relevant jobs which the candidate might have missed out on otherwise. Ultimately, this partnership brings more relevant jobs to candidates, creating more economic opportunity. Google is working with many organizations, including LinkedIn, CareerBuilder, Monster, that's a big job board site, and, yes, Facebook. Goodness sakes, how could Facebook not be part of something innovative and new on the internet? Anyway, Google's working with those companies and more to bring users the most comprehensive job listings possible. That's according to Nick Zakrzek, a product manager at Google. Google is publishing open documentation for all job providers, including third-party platforms and direct employers, whether large or small, so that their job openings are more discoverable. Michael Jude, a research manager at Straightcast Frost & Sullivan, there's a smart guy we quote a lot because he knows a lot, put it mildly. Anyway, he said the Google technology competes directly with Indeed, which also aggregates job searches across multiple sites. However, according to Paul Darcy, senior VP at Indeed, our experience shows clearly that search is useful only if it has all the jobs. For this reason, Indeed focuses on comprehensiveness, working relentlessly to get every job on Indeed, including jobs from 3 million employers that post directly to Indeed. Most of these jobs are not available on any other job site. Job search is one of the most important searches in a person's life. We've always assumed that the largest companies in the world would want to enter the job space. Indeed's strategy remains the same. And again, this comes from Paul Darcy, their senior VP at Indeed, a big job search site. He said, "We continue to focus on relentlessly innovating to help people get jobs. This is our sole mission, and we have nearly 5 years dedicated to building the technologies and services that provide jobbers the best chance to get hired." Google had no information to share regarding how to service companies. Sorry, Google had no information to share regarding how its service compares to Indeed, according to spokesperson Susan Kudryka. However, she said, to ensure even more jobs are listed over time, we're publishing open documentation for all jobs providers from third-party platforms or direct employers, big or small, detailing how to make their job openings discoverable in this new feature. Now, Facebook, of course, they're always in the mix, right? They recently launched their own job search capability, as you probably know. They certainly talk about it on the app and when you go to Facebook.com. Now, this Facebook job search system is not likely to have much of an impact According to our expert, Mike Jude from Straightcast Frost and Sullivan, due to the stigma that many employers associate with using social media sites for job searching. But Facebook's partnership with Google may have brighter prospects. Gaurav Dosi, product manager at Facebook, said, "We've launched the ability to apply to jobs on Facebook to make it faster and easier to find the right job. We've been thrilled to hear from people and business owners alike that Facebook has helped take the work out of their searches. We think this partnership with Google will make everyone's search that much easier." Zach Fuller, an analyst at Midia Research, said, "The new job search technology will serve two purposes. It'll function as a driver of additional revenue by making Google act as a recruiter for talent, while diversifying the stream from AdWords-based advertising. It'll also serve as a testing ground for Google's artificial intelligence capabilities. By implementing artificial intelligence into the process, I perceive it as a way for Google to familiarize users with what will be a core technology for the company." And according to Zach Fuller from Midia Research, Jim McGregor from Teriot, expert we quote often, said, "You have to wonder what took Google so long to do this." And thank you very much, Adam. Well, sometimes in the radio business, we can actually thank ourselves, because that was me on a segment that I recorded a couple months ago. Interesting topic, but I really wanted to talk today's top technology topics with my frequent guest and brother in broadcasting, cousin in communication of sorts, Nick CJ from Wales. We had some technical problems earlier. I got frustrated. Nick got frustrated. The usual method we connect is not working, but that's not your fault as a listener. So we tried the alternate method, which actually is just through Facebook. Facebook again. Having lots of money there in California, lots of smart people, and usually can find a way to get people to communicate. So we'll try this one more time. Nick, are you there?
I am there. Okay. I am here. And no, I'm not there. I'm here.
Do I sound okay? Is the voice clear?
Yeah, very clear. Okay, well, that's so bad. Am I going through the in quotation marks board now,
or yes.
Am I being held to the microphone?
Yes, and you wouldn't be on the air if you weren't. So, yeah, you sound great, I mean, as you normally do. The usual method isn't working. I don't think it's my fault. I just got frustrated, and sometimes even we computer techs have computer problems, but you got to fly by the seat of your pants in not only the IT business, but also in the radio business, and I did find a way to get this to work while still making fun of myself, and that's always part of the enjoyment of the broadcasting business. So it's 2:30 p.m. right there in Wales, right, Nick?
It is, yeah. Okay. And it is very windy, so I was very late getting back into the office after lunch because I was strapping things down. We've got huge winds, and there's no way that you would believe that this was the middle of summer, and in fact, August.
Earlier in the show, before the tech problems reared their ugly head, but thankfully I think they're okay now. I told my listeners about me and my business. Nick, first, you recently had a birthday. We want to wish you a happy birthday on the air. We won't discuss which birthday, but you're still certainly a spring rooster or spring chicken, whatever the term may be. Nick, why don't you tell my listeners about your business and how long you've been around computers?
Been around computers 33 years. I know that because it's the age of my eldest daughter, which is a bit of a clue towards the age. But yes, the web, and not the web really, no, computers had started, and I'd had a daughter and I'd had a spinal operation, so I couldn't continue with the work I was doing. And so I thought, right, I'm not going to have children ask me questions about computers and not be able to answer them. So I set up my business then 33 years ago and did all sorts of things, started with graphics and things like that. And then the internet came about, and then I was very lucky that somebody offered me money. I don't know if you remember. Do you remember fax spamming?
Fax spamming, where you send out junk faxes?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, well, yeah, we still get that get-rich-quick schemes and all that other stuff that we get on our fax machine.
Well, I met a guy one day. I was fixing his computer, and he was a fax spammer. He was a nice fax spammer, and he was faxing very, very large companies, IBM's and Imperial Tobacco Company, Burberry, Shell, telling them about courses that he could put on to let them know what the internet was about. Forgotten to get somebody to do the course, or the person that was going to do the course dropped out. So he asked me if I would do it. And that was really the start of my internet career. And I used to go off to London to the Hilton with about 8 monitors in the back of a car and connect them all up and then give demonstrations to all of these people and tell them what it was about and how to write in raw HTML and all sorts of things.
Quite intriguing, Nick. Yeah, necessity is a mother of invention, isn't it? That's kind of how you got into the business.
Definitely. That and not wanting to get left behind. And I think a lot of my customers now even just, I will get customers that come to me in their 60s, 70s, 80s wanting a laptop or they've had a laptop and they want a tablet. And basically they don't want to get left behind and they don't want to have their grandkids asking them questions that they can't answer. So I think that's it's quite good in that respect.
On Tuesday, Nick, I had my local friend of mine, we do business together sometimes, Brandon Oak, on the first show, the Adam the Computer Guy radio show, the Tuesday edition. This, of course, is the Thursday edition. Then on the second show, which we call Mid-Morning Coffee Break with Adam, I had Dr. Ronald Feynman, a frequent guest of myself and Scott, on our shows. And we talked politics, of course. On both shows, Nick, we discussed that, I call him President Donald, the United States president seems to govern by tweet. And he's using social media to pretty much run the government, which might be an interesting tool. Certainly politicians and rulers of many types are on Facebook and Twitter and other forms of social media. But should you really be enacting and proclaiming policies via tweet? Nick, I know we've talked about the royal family and about your Prime Minister, Theresa May, and they do use social media, right? They're on Twitter and they're on Facebook.
The royal family don't. Well, the youngsters do, but the older ones don't at all. There is a palace Twitter account and a palace Facebook account, but there are also some bogus ones, but nothing like the President Donald does. And going back to that, I think it's horrendous, the stuff that he's doing. I mean, when you get a decision made by our Prime Minister Theresa May or something is done through the government, one is aware that there are a lot of steps going on in the background to check it, to limit it, to make sure that things are done properly. And he just seems to be doing the same as we do on our social media and upsetting friends sometimes and sometimes saying things that you wish you could retract because it's not been checked by 400 civil servants sitting in a little office first. And I think it's very, very dangerous, very dangerous.
So you're of the opinion, as is Dr. Feynman and myself, and again, my guest Brandon, that enacting policies and proclaiming what you want to do or don't want to do probably should not be done by tweet, especially at 6:30 in the morning, a major policy like the one that the president talked about a few days ago, the transgender military ban. You would feel there are better ways of doing that.
Oh, 100%, 100%. It's just, it's frightening, the stuff that are being done.
So in the United Kingdom, they don't tweet policies. They kind of do it the old-fashioned, traditional way.
Yep, and it goes before two houses, very similar to yours. We have the House of Commons that will look at something as a policy and before it's done, and then it goes in front of the House of Lords, who can then stop it or okay it, and then sometimes it'll get presented to another internal group, and then it's approved, and then it becomes policy, and then it has to be enacted. But the thought of Theresa May saying, you know, I don't like XY country, and they're really annoying me, and I'm going to do something about it, you know, would scare the pants off me, especially being as the Prezi Donald, or Coco the Clown, as some of us know him over here, has his finger on a button, a very big red button.
Now, I also shared an article with you, Nick, yesterday that says the Queen, who's, I believe, 91 years old, that she enjoys 4 cocktails a day. I kind of found that intriguing. Maybe that's her key to such a long life. She's very spry for 91, and she's been queen for quite a long time.
She's been queen for as long as I've been alive. When was she? Her coronation was 1953. So, yeah. I mean, an amazing reign, but I'm skeptical as to. I mean, I couldn't function on four cocktails a day, so I don't. 91-year-old.
Do you think that that's a true story, or is someone just playing it?
No.
What do you think about that? It seemed legitimate, but you never really know. Even our president says fake news, and yes, some news is fake, but I like to think most of it is real.
I think that one was fake. I think somebody found a picture of her with a glass of wine in their hand and decided to make some news.
But I do think
that one's fake.
She's not a teetotaler, though. Certainly she does drink, but not the four cocktails a day. That's probably an exaggeration.
Yeah. She definitely drinks, yes.
And she doesn't tweet. So as I told you when we were talking earlier, I can see her sitting there on her throne with her cocktail in one hand and her iPhone in the other, just tweeting policies and maybe using Snapchat to talk to her grandsons, you know, talking to Wills and Harry, etc. So if that isn't really what happens, but I guess it's kind of an amusing scenario nonetheless.
An interesting idea. Very interesting.
But we would be of the agreement, Nick, that in all seriousness, the Queen and Prime Minister Theresa May, they don't rule by tweet. They may use social media to some extent, but important policies, especially with the military, I mean, the president's job of overseeing the military, that's one of the most important things that the president does, that those kind of things shouldn't be done by tweet at 6:30 a.m., and that perhaps the United States president needs to change the way that he communicates and talks about his policies.
100%. I think the man is it's dangerous is the only word for it. I think, just even thinking that out loud is somewhat dangerous, and voicing it is even worse, and then voicing it basically in print is craziness. I did see an article this morning that was talking about perhaps there should be a psychological evaluation of anybody who's actually standing for president stroke prime minister, and basically get them, you have a certificate that says that you are compos mentis enough to serve. I mean, if the reason that I wouldn't have voted for the Donald was the fact that the guy seems like a megalomaniac, and the last person you put in charge of a big red button is a megalomaniac. So it does seem slightly odd.
Well, he certainly is different, let's just put it that way. About 40 minutes after 9, 20 before 10 in the a.m., Adam Lepp here, the computer guy, with the Thursday installment of my twice-weekly radio show on the Talking Place, WWGH. We're speaking with Nick C.J. from Wales in the United Kingdom. And yes, that very cool accent, it's real because that's where he is. And by the magic of technology, he sounds like he's next door. We had multiple technological issues earlier, but I managed to find a way to solve them, and the show must go on, as they say. Nick, we talked on previous shows about the WannaCry malware, the ransomware, which was actually bigger in your neck of the woods than it was here in the colonies, or the states, as we call them, because they are states. But there was a state of malware usage and people's bank accounts getting drained due to sometimes paying the ransom to remove this malware, and you had several customers bring in computers that you were successfully, in some cases, able to remove this ransomware from. Essentially, the malware perpetrators said either you pay a few hundred dollars in Bitcoin or all your files will be encrypted. Not sure if you saw this update from CNN, Nick. More than $140,000 worth of digital currency Bitcoin has been drained from three accounts linked to the ransomware virus, WannaCry, which hit hundreds of thousands of computers around the world in May. It's not clear, though, who emptied the accounts and why he or she did it. If the WannaCry hackers are finally trying to get their hands on the money, they'll have to outwit law enforcement agencies from around the globe. It's a fresh twist in the mysterious attack that cybersecurity experts have linked to a hacking group associated with North Korea. When the WannaCry virus started spreading through more than 150 countries, infecting hospitals, businesses, and government systems, it demanded that victims pay a $300 ransom with Bitcoin. So these bank accounts are now being drained. Do you have any thoughts on that, Nick, this whole debacle with the WannaCry malware?
Yeah, well, the biggest affected sort of people here were our National Health Service, who seemed to be running a lot of old networks. It was the British one, not the Welsh one. A lot of old networks with Windows XP on the back end of it. So, of course, they weren't up to date with updates and things. I don't think they paid any ransoms, but it cost them a lot in technology they lost, etc. But the thing that amazed me that in an article that I read was the fact that I always thought Bitcoin was the ultimate anonymous currency. And it appears it isn't the ultimate anonymous currency, and that everything is in fact tracked and kept on a network of computers in a sort of mesh of pseudo IP addresses, stroke codes, stroke whatever, that actually say where everything is going. So ultimately, if you get paid by Bitcoin and then you drain it back out, you will get caught. It's not quite the same as having cash in hand. So that I found quite amazing. The other thing that I thought of with the technology playing up, and it was so big when our National Health Service got affected. I was spending this morning watching a program about Rise of the Robots and how scary it is, how conscious they're becoming, etc. And then I was thinking of that against the same hack that we talked about, and the National Health hack. So if we had a set of robots which were built by a company, let's not say Microsoft or Apple, but and we all have one in our home, and then we had a hack which told it to murder the occupants of the home and take it over, where would we then stand, Adam?
Good point. So many different angles to this, and bottom line is don't ever compromise the security of your network or your personal computer at the home or the office, and you'll avoid these kind of problems. So essentially, Nick, the Bitcoin may not be quite as anonymous as they say it is. There's always a way to track something. You can always track by IP address or some other kind of electronic paper trail, so to speak.
Yeah, the program that I watched on Bitcoin was saying how there is a in essence, just like an old accountant, you know, would have his little book with his register of what's bought and sold. There is one of those which registers every Bitcoin that's issued and spent and where it goes from. So if I give you one Bitcoin, there's a little transaction between you and I, which goes into this little register. And I always imagine it like a little grey-haired man that's sitting in a room with his big old book and his fountain pen. And that's how they'd illustrated it in this documentary. But then what happens is that little transaction, that little book, is actually kept on sort of 100 computers, randomly swung, so it's always there. So however big it grows, it will always be there living in the network and ultimately trackable.
So almost anything in the IT world, if it's on a network, if it's on the internet, can be tracked in some fashion. Certainly some entities are more easily tracked than others. And bottom line is just watch what you click. And don't give money to the ransomware perpetrators. And just try to be safe out there, so to speak. Use updated, useful antivirus software. Don't click anything that is suspicious. Again, if it looks like a rat, it probably is. And especially with email attachments, because that's normally how these bad programs are spread. Be careful before you click anything. Check it two or three times, and if you're not sure, just delete it.
Just don't do it. Yeah.
Yeah. Nothing will be as bad as what could happen if you do click on a bad link. And
definitely don't pay them, Adam. I mean, the comparison that I saw was that somebody has come up and stolen your wallet and then comes back up to you and says, "I'll give you your wallet back if you give me $300." But you know, if they're already a thief and already mugged you, basically, if you give them another $300, they're going to run away and come back tomorrow and ask for another $300. So you have to take it as a loss, I think, once you've got caught, and hopefully get somebody who's good at IT to get it off. But if not, you have to mark it down as you wish you'd been a little bit brighter in the first place and put a good antivirus on and kept everything updated.
Well, thankfully, the WannaCry malware problem has subsided. Not that these kind of problems won't recur or that there could still be some pieces left over. But it seems like it came and went, and we can get back to our lives. But still, you want to watch every attachment, every pop-up. Anything which looks suspicious, just try to use your intuition, because usually it's right, even if you have to be a little bit cynical about some things. That pretty much sum it up, Nick. Or anything else you want to share with our listeners to keep their computers and network safe?
No, I think the old adage, trust no one.
Right, and again, if it smells like a rat, it probably is.
Yeah, most definitely.
We are speaking with Nick C.J., a longtime friend and business associate of mine, here on the Adam the Computer Guy radio show. He's in Eastern Wales, where the current time is 2:48 in the p.m., if I'm not mistaken. Nick, you were telling me about some little app of sorts that turns a PDF file into a website and does it rather easily.
Yeah, I had a very big job on to put a schedule, which was for a local agricultural show. And it was a big agricultural show. They had a 60-page PDF, and they wanted that put up very quickly. So to build the website would be quite complex. So I found a program which is called www.pdfaid.com. And if anybody does have a small PDF, I think a big one was quite technical to do, but a small one, and they want to just put it or add it to their website, it is a brilliant program. The thing that I found astonishing about it was that this PDF had a front cover that was all color and was made up of a lot of items in, overlaid graphic. And it actually took the whole thing apart and mapped where every graphic went, which I thought was very clever. If that could then be done and used the same thing to transfer it to Word or whatever, it will be a brilliant aid.
So you're kind of a advocate of these programs that can transform one format to another and do it easily and in a user-friendly fashion.
Oh, definitely. And online. All online. So, I mean, I always used to use a program for doing my HTML coding, which was a simple markup program, which used to just color my code for me, so that it was quite handy. And it kept getting a bit flaky. I found the same thing online now. And it's brilliant, which means I don't have to load anything. I don't have to wait for it to be updated. There's no charge unless you're using the pro version. So, yeah, it's astonishing where we're going with software and apps, etc.
We talked last time we got together about Microsoft Paint not really being phased out, but not being directly part of the operating system like it had been in the past. And that's after Microsoft had essentially retired the Solitaire program from Windows 10, which upset some of our clients, especially the older ones that like Solitaire. And it's a nice thing to come with the computer as a small footprint, again, not a very big program. It runs quickly and never really causes any crashes or other problems. That Paint, which is a basic graphics editor, which has been around, I believe, 32 years, and that's a long, long time. It's about two lifetimes in computer years, that it isn't directly being included with this Windows 10 update that's coming out in a few weeks, but you have to download it through the Windows Store. Nick, you probably heard me discuss about how Adobe Flash, the popular program that web developers like you and me have used for 20-plus years, about 20 years, I believe it came out in 1998, that it is being phased out and being retired in 2020. That with HTML5 and all these WordPress plugins, although Flash does many good things, the modern alternatives actually are better, plus they're also more secure. Did you use Flash a lot, Nick, when you started doing web programs a few years ago? Or what's your perspective on the retirement of the Adobe Flash platform?
I did used to like Flash. I mean, as you say, a lot of stuff now is done within the programs. You and I both use WordPress a lot, and for stuff on the web, stuff, you know, interactive stuff on the web, WordPress, you can just get a little module that will do stuff. But I used to use stuff by a company called Coffee Cup Software, who are somewhere in the States. And that I used to build Flash graphics and things like that with that. And it was very handy. In the old days, you used to have to sort of get 5 graphics in various stages of movement and then import them into a little Flash program and mount them on top of each other, and you would end up with a little animated graphic. But of course, you can do all of that again online now, so these things pass, I suppose.
Yeah, I've used the Coffee Cup Software programs also, and they were rather innovative for their time, but things have changed so much in that 10 to 15 year time frame, and so much you can do with WordPress and plugins and HTML5, and although there are always security issues with anything done online, Flash has certainly had some security problems where the Google Chrome browser and Internet Explorer have required that you accept the plugin as a default, or even that you click to activate it. And that's kind of inconvenient. You want a website to come up and not have to really do anything. And with the plugins that are used from WordPress or other platforms, where there are so many different things you can do just by searching online, and a lot of these good plugins which might animate or provide forms or security or some kind of an e-commerce method, a way to do transactions online, that those really are just better, and that Flash was good in its time but maybe didn't keep up with modern needs and modern websites and the modern way that websites will look and the way that companies interact with their customers, organizations interact, and now there really are better alternatives.
Yeah, it's funny though, Adam, how you and I have both had to sort of, in essence, change our businesses as we go along and mold ourselves to fit in with how the digital stuff moves on. I mean, when I look at the things that I repair now, tablets and phones sometimes, they are so small, and I have an electronic microscope. I've got various bits of headgear I wear. And I used to have trouble when I started thinking that I'd ever be able to repair a laptop. I did a MacBook Pro the other day, replaced its keyboard. 53 screws, which were the size of watch screws, you know, the sort of screw you'd have holding a jeweler's placement in the back of a watch, just holding the keyboard on, 53 individual screws. So we've had to change, whereas companies like Coffee Cup, for instance, the software that we've both used, based all of their software around Flash, and in essence have run out of work. So yeah, you've got to keep changing.
Yeah, they live and die with Flash, and although Flash is still used, and it's really pretty easy to make some pretty cool effects with it, there just are better solutions, and also ones that are less expensive, because you also have to buy Flash and buy the updates, where a lot of this WordPress stuff, well, it's free, or the cost is minimal. So many things that change and evolve, and it seems like almost every day we're talking about something new or some other kind of update. Something else that I think might have been the reason for Flash, we tried to connect with Skype earlier and talked about how Skype apparently is down today, or at least it's not working here, which got me quite frustrated. Anyway, Microsoft acquired Skype. Again, Facebook acquired WhatsApp and Snapchat. So sometimes the big guys acquire the little guys. I think Facebook owns WhatsApp. I might be mistaken, but they've certainly swallowed up several products that are similar in the social networking and messaging realm. And Microsoft acquired Skype, which was a very good way of communicating over the internet via video and via audio. Flash was originally, as you know, Nick, part of Macromedia Software, and Adobe acquired that company several years ago. And sometimes when these big conglomerates acquire other companies, sometimes they don't keep up with the capabilities of what these products can do. Do you think, Nick, if Flash were not part of that part of Adobe was still part of Macromedia, or maybe a smaller company, that maybe it would have survived better? Is that worth considering at all?
Oh, definitely, definitely. I think that it's astonishing how things like that change, and it's down to, ignore my phone in the background here, it's astonishing how things chop and change. The big boys just don't have the impetus or the need to look after that little program or that little niche.
This is Nick, the computer.
So we would agree then that it isn't, it's often not good when a big company swallows up another one, and of course that's less competition. We see that in the telecom business, where in the States AT&T has become a huge conglomerate, actually a much bigger company than they were before they were divested about 35 years ago. The divestiture was an antitrust issue to try to break it up into smaller companies, but now AT&T has become much bigger than it was. Of course, that was before the internet, before UVerse and other products, but ironically, we've kind of come full circle and undivested. It's become a bigger company, and Adobe, by buying up companies that produce products that are somewhat like the kind of products that they have, the rich media, again, the Photoshop probably being their flagship program, Adobe Audition, which is used by radio stations, and audio producers, people like myself, they buy Flash, and it seems like it might have been better if a smaller company still had a handle on it. Plus, do they really know the program as well because they didn't develop it? So that happens a lot in the software business.
Yeah. I had a company I used to buy all my images from called Fotolia, and they were very, very good, a subscription service, just been bought out by Adobe. Prices have all gone up, images have changed, and basically Adobe. And I didn't sign up Adobe, and I didn't want Adobe. I liked my company, you know, and the way that they did business. So Adobe have managed to, in essence, put them out of business by doing that.
You know, sometimes the resources of a big company can help a product grow, but sometimes, and oftentimes, like it is, I think, with Adobe and Microsoft, it's counteracted by not putting as much of an effort into developing and supporting and securing that program. Nick, I want to thank you for joining me. The Adam the Computer Guy radio show is ending in a few seconds, and you have a great day there in Wales. AdamTheComputerGuy.com.